And welcome back to the Roundtable on a Tuesday morning. Sunshine at the moment, 11 minutes after 9 o'clock. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's the Roundtable panel, and I think you know how this works. If you're just tuning in for the first time, we get people who know stuff, and they talk about stuff. And you can join us by emailing stuff to panel@wamc.org. You can keep your letters brief, if possible, and to the point, if possible. No links, don't use abbreviations, proofread them. And one per day per customer, panel@wamc.org. Now let's meet the panel. WAMC's president and CEO, all-around lovely person, Alan Shartok, is here. Good morning, sir.
Well, I want to wish our wonderful Libby Post a happy birthday.
Woo-hoo! Thank you.
I was getting to that, but you've stolen my thunder. That's all right. Libby Post is here. She's a lobbyist and a political consultant and a birthday person. Congratulations, Libby,
Thank you. Another
revolution around the sun. Mike Spain, recently retired, now goes to the early bird buffet at Shoney's. He was the associate editor of the Times Union, and now he's how's the retirement thing working out for you?
Oh, pretty well, Ray.
Yeah? Are you enjoying yourself?
Oh, you betcha.
Do you wear, like, the visor now and the green pants and you go out to the dog track and whatnot? No?
All of that.
Really?
Oh, all
good.
That, yeah.
J.P. Miller is here from the Empire Report. How are you, sir?
I'm great. How are you, Ray?
You know, pretty good. We have a full house in here. My God, we got a full panel. Fran Berman, who is the Edward Hamilton Distinguished Professor of Computer Science at RPI and a faculty associate at the Berkman Klein Center for Internet and Society over at the Harvard. Fran Berman, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Nice to have
quite
you.
Quite a dancer.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
You
dance. Committed, but not very good dancer.
Oh, no. I've heard about your dancer.
This is the microphone, sir.
I know you're going to get, you know, a call from Jacob's Pillow this
No
summer.
Doubt. No doubt.
So you do,
I think
do the
they
dancing.
Need someone at their concession.
Ballroom, ballet, what do you do?
I take ballet lessons and I contra dance.
Well, good for you. Now, what is the contra dancing?
Coming up.
Oh, no, the flurry was last weekend.
It was last weekend? Okay,
it was fantastic.
It. Oh,
everybody
good.
Who went to the flurry, I hope you had as good a time as I did.
So this contra dancing, this is people who argue with each other, or is this some sort of...
No, they're all Sandinistas.
Counter-revolutionary
Nicaraguan dance.
Sandinistas only.
All right, well, it's the round table here, and once again, the email address is panel@wamc.org. If you want to wish Libby a happy birthday, that would be very
happy
nice.
Happy birthday, Libby.
Thank you.
News this morning, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders announced he is running for president in 2020. The question now for Bernie is whether he can stand out in a crowded field of Democratic candidates, many of whom now embrace some of those ideas that he introduced a few years ago that were pretty far left and are now moving to the mainstream. Alan.
If Bernie wants it, he gets the nomination. And then the question is, does he win? Can a Bernie versus Trump election end up in the election of Bernie? I think it very well could. I think it could have done it last time, to be honest with you. I think people were looking for somebody outside the sort of mainstream. That's why we got Trump. If Bernie had been the candidate, I think he might well have won. Now, there will be 14 letters immediately saying, she did win, she got more votes. No, he's the president, she's not. End of that discussion. I think he just has put a death knell on, and I don't mean that physically, I mean a death knell on the candidacy of Elizabeth Warren.
That's an interesting point.
Because, you know, because this is the real thing, and the polling shows people are still wild about Bernie.
Alan, don't you think, though, that Bernie getting, if he does succeed and get the Democratic nomination, being a self-professed Democratic socialist, it'll encourage a third-party candidate, you know, like the Starbucks guy or somebody else?
Well, you know, anything is possible. We've seen third-party candidates who have gone nowhere, and we have certainly seen third-party candidates who have ruined elections for others.
Well, that's what I was wondering.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that could be tough. I think this guy, Trump, is now so discredited in terms of what's coming out virtually every day, and we haven't even seen the Mueller report yet, that I think his time is limited as president.
Well, did you watch Andrew McCabe's 60 Minutes interview?
Yeah.
That was damning.
I watched
every We're getting to that, I believe.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Thanks, Mike, for keeping everybody in line here.
Okay.
J.P. Miller, can a candidate as far left as Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren, for that matter, win the heartland of America?
Absolutely. You see Bernie's message of free health care for all, free college education for all, anti-billionaire and millionaire rhetoric. That has become the mainstream of the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party has gone further left since the election of Donald Trump. There are also, I think, a lot of members of the Democratic Party who feel like Bernie was wronged in 2016. The Democratic National Committee chairwoman, Donna Brazile, came out and said that the election was rigged in favor of Hillary. You know, they were putting debates during football games and all this kind of stuff because they knew that Hillary wasn't that great of a candidate. And I agree with Alan. I think that Bernie is now likely to get the nomination. And I think he's got a great shot at beating President Trump. Why not?
So I don't agree with that, JP. First of all, I agree with everything you just said, except for the fact that, you know, Bernie should run and that, you know, Bernie would get it in this field. I mean, I think about this, and Bernie was a great candidate last time until the end of the primary season. Mm-hmm. And then he was a sore loser. And if you think about Bernie's track record in Washington, he brought up a lot of stuff that I personally believe in and I think really supports the public good in the U.S., which is, I think, the job of the government. But he wasn't very effective in getting those things passed. He was a loner. He, you know, brought up a new idea, but he didn't make the new ideas happen. And I worry that even though up to the primary he was a really great candidate last time, I'm not sure how good of a president he would be. And I really care about that. I think the other folks in the field, I worry about other things. Some of them have a lack of experience. Some of them, I think, really, you know, aren't the best candidates for the job. But I'd really like to see them, you know, go the distance.
One thing that Alan brought up that I would like to get the other panel's opinion of, and Alan was fairly concrete in saying this is a death knell for Elizabeth Warren's campaign. Elizabeth Warren, who has many of the same tenets of her platform that Bernie had, obviously will do well, potentially in New Hampshire, as will Bernie. So let's go around the room and find out, is this it for Elizabeth Warren? And we'll start with Libby.
I think she should stay in the Senate. I think she's a legislator. I think she can do more, be more powerful, have a greater voice if she stays in the Senate. And this may very well be proved to make her campaign even more difficult than it's already going to be. So, yeah, I think she should stay where she is.
Mike Spay.
If there were no other dynamic women in the Democratic primary, perhaps she could square off against Bernie. But I think that support will move away to others, and it's going to diminish her ability to, you know, get the base going. And Bernie has it already. He just has to make sure he doesn't mess it up. And he has to nurture what he built 4 years ago.
J.P. Miller.
I think that Elizabeth Warren came in with very high expectations, which is a very tough thing to sustain if you're a political candidate. Those expectations are now lowered. And I think that once you get her on the debate stage, she's an extremely effective communicator. She can make people both laugh and cry through humor and emotion in talking about her family. So I like Elizabeth Warren as a candidate. I don't think that she's out yet.
Fran Berman.
I agree with Libby. I think she should stay in the Senate. You know, as I'm thinking through these candidates, there are four criteria that matter to me. First of all, what's their stand on public good? Education, infrastructure, cyberspace, etc. Second of all, you know, how are they going to take where we are internationally and bring that forward? Or are they going to be able to repair the relationships and deal globally? Number three, what kind of character do they have? Are they sexist? Are they biased? Are they racist? Are they homophobic? Are they against immigrants? All of that stuff matters to me. And the fourth thing is experience. You know, do they have some experience that will enable them to navigate, you know, Washington culture? When I look at Elizabeth Warren, I think she's exactly where she should be, and she's making an impact there, and I think she should stay in the Senate.
Alan Shartok, now, JP brought up this point. You all seem to be in agreement that Bernie Sanders has what it takes this time to win the Democratic nomination if it goes that far. Mike Spain's sort of shaking his head. My question for JP was, does he have what it takes to win a general election in the heartland?
Well, you know, my sense of the last election, for whatever it's worth, is that the American people were looking for an outsider the last time. And that if Bernie had been the candidate, he had a chance of winning because all those people who felt that they had been screwed over were looking for somebody who would say, okay, I'm down here in Detroit, I'm here and there, my kids are not being given what they need, health care isn't what it is, and I think he would have won, but who knows, one sponge.
I agree, he has a very similar populist message that as President Trump does, and pollsters couldn't understand in 2016 how voters would list their preferences and it would be Bernie, then Trump, or Trump, then Bernie. Yeah. They were either going to vote for one of those two outsider candidates.
Well, neither one are outsiders anymore.
But Bernie's really still an outsider. But he really captured the millennials. I mean, think about how the voting population is changing.
Yeah,
and,
that's right.
You know, the millennials really loved Bernie and he really appealed to them and in ways that I find really inspiring and exciting. And I hope that's a trend, not just for Bernie, but for all the candidates going forward.
And I want to talk to this business about Bernie as a sore winner or a sore loser. Remember that? I'm sorry, Ray. I know I'm not.
There you go,
okay,
sir.
Thank you.
Good job.
I appreciate that. Good job. We always say that to kids. Good job. Good shit. Good job. Okay. So here's the deal. You know, Bernie obviously was a leader. So there are those people who say, well, you know, he didn't do anything in the Senate. Well, Democratic Socialist, he caucused with the Democrats. But the fact of the matter is he wasn't a Democrat. And I was talking to Fran before the show and talking about the hockey game in which the hockey players beat each other over the head with sticks. And it really seems like they hate each other. But when they walk off, they put their arms around each other. And people are cynical about that. They think the game is loaded. Bernie didn't do that. So he's been beaten up for not being properly pro-Hillary, although he did come around toward the end there. But in fact, he was walking out and he's saying, a curse on you guys because our grandchildren need to go to a free state university. Hey, I went to one, to Hunter, and it was free. And a lot of people who went with me who would never have gotten out of college, would never gotten into college without having that free. So I think free health care, free education. We, as I've said so many times, we say to them, okay, we're going to pay for you for high school and elementary school, but not for college. That's where the cutoff comes. And then you're saying to a good part of the population, you cannot make out as a result.
Hey, like Alan, do you think that Bernie should enroll in the Democratic Party?
You know, I haven't thought it through. You know, he's the kind of guy who doesn't like to appear...
as a conformist?
Well, no, as a, you know, a political prostitute. He doesn't want to be seen as somebody who, you know, does the conventional thing because the very things we're talking about precludes that from happening. Don't you see?
If he's not an enrolled Democrat, I don't think he should be running in the Democratic primaries. I'm sorry.
Well, you're a Hillary. Is your birthday, and I don't want to pick on you.
Well, no. I'm sorry,
oh,
but
no.
Alan,
if
you know,
if I ever saw one.
It's not just Hillary-esque. It's the reality. You know, you join a political party. You want to have a decision, and the decisions that political party makes, then that's the way it works, and then you run. If you aren't part of that party, you shouldn't have the ability to impact that party's primary elections or choices of who gets elected. I just feel really strongly that if he wants to run in the Democratic primary, he needs to change his party registration and become a Democrat.
And would you be satisfied if he did that?
Then I wouldn't bring this piece of criticism up. That doesn't mean I would support him.
Do you feel that Democratic Socialists are Democrats?
I think that they are, but they are not. But Bernie isn't enrolled as a Democrat. AOC is enrolled as a Democrat, and she considers herself a Democratic Socialist. There's a lot of the newbies in Congress, and even some in the state Senate.
I disagree with you, Alan, but for a different reason.
Okay.
I think part of being a professional, no matter what your profession is part of being a successful professional is knowing when to color inside the lines and knowing when to color outside the lines. And that distinction is really important
because sometimes
when you want to get stuff done, you have to do things in unconventional ways. Sometimes when you want to get things done, you have to do things in conventional ways. I think that Bernie gave it his all. It wasn't a fair system. I think I agree with JP. It was, you know, rigged in ways that the Democratic Party shouldn't have rigged. But, you know, once he lost the primary, it was way more important to prevail in the general election than it was for him to be nursing his wounds.
And
you know, for me, I lost respect for him when he took a really long time to come around.
If this anti-status quo feeling is in fact the norm now with regard to traditional Democrats and Republicans, why didn't Bernie just say, listen, I'm running as an independent?
Well, because he couldn't win.
Well,
that's an easy answer.
Are you sure?
Yes. Independents, third-party candidates don't win in this
haven't won
right?
yet.
Okay.
Things have changed, though, yes?
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
Well, to your earlier point, Alan, whoever wins the Democratic Party's nomination be running against?
You mean who will
win? What Republican?
Well, it depends. I mean, I have great hope that the Mueller report is going to show real collusion and worse.
But will that mean another Republican will emerge and get the nomination while Trump loses the party nomination, or will he get bounced out?
Well, I mean, you know, we've seen so many politicians who, as a result of the potential for going to jail, seem to make a deal, which is if I get out, they're going to leave me alone. I have a better chance of being left alone. My friend Elliot Spitzer certainly was in that situation when he resigned from the governorship. Do I think if the evidence is overwhelming and there's sort of an implied deal you can get out, what we would hope for is that his vice president, Mr. Pence, would be the candidate because he would be, as they said in Gin Rummy, schmattit.
Yes.
Okay.
He couldn't win. He would not be able to win.
Well, they said that about Trump.
No, well, you know, but that was three years ago, and the politic of the country has changed. And Pence is so hateful, and he doesn't have the force of personality that Trump did.
You're right about the personality.
Is Trump's base Pence's base? Do we know?
Pence's base is Trump's base to the point where it's all the evangelical right-wing Christians.
Right, we need to take a break here. The email address is panel@wamc.org. I have a feeling we'll get a few letters on this topic. panel@wamc.org. The panel today, Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, Libby Post, and Fran Berman. This is the Roundtable. We'll be back. You know, Mike Bowen, for the most part, our engineer, picks the music for the show.
And yes,
he's psychic.
Does.
I was driving in today listening to John Scofield, and I said, you know, I ought to talk to Mike about getting some John Scofield on. And I didn't do it, and he put John Scofield on.
You know what?
I always thought
you were psychic, too.
Really? What am I thinking now? Don't say it. We'll lose our license. Alan Chartok is here. Mike Spain is here. J.P. Miller, Libby Post, and Fran Berman. It's the Roundtable panel, and Ray in for Joe. This week. The email address is panel@wamc.org. And Alan, a stack of letters.
Oh, we do. Okay, here we go. How can it be, says Judith, how can it be that the American political system allows and enables someone like Trump to be what he is and where he is today at all? let alone that his focus is pushing 2020 when so many major issues remain unresolved today at the beginning of 2019. That's from our friend Jude. And Daisy, another friend, says, Elizabeth Warren, she's pulling in massive crowds, and the difference between her and Bernie is a huge difference. Bernie has platitudes. Elizabeth Warren has a story to tell and specific plans. Big difference, Daisy. Anybody? No. Okay. Jean says, no country for old men. No more septuagenarian presidents. I'm only 57 and I get tired. Okay.
But that's a good question. He'll be 79 when he would be elected, and he will turn 80 the September of his first year in office if he were elected, Bernie Sanders. Is 80 too old to function and lead and have the stamina and the physical health necessary to lead a country?
What do you think, Mike? Let's see if we can get you into trouble.
Why don't you ask Alan?
I'm older than the reader, or than the writer of that last note, and I get tired.
Well, yeah. I wrote a column recently in which I was talking about ageism. And as much as I love you, Mike, I think you're an ageist. And here's why. Because there are all those people who are always saying, okay, I retired, so you should retire also.
I think someone my age could be president. I'm not saying that.
Yeah, okay.
I also think that the primary process is a grueling process where you have to be on 24 hours a day for 8 or 9 months straight. And I think that kind of weeds out.
Yeah.
Weeds out who has the stamina.
Well, then how did Ronald Reagan get the nomination?
Right. Well, I don't know.
It was a different time.
Well, no, there are those people who think that Ronald Reagan, who did have Alzheimer's later in life.
Nancy Reagan did a lot of work.
Yeah, did that. And that's part of what was going on there. But people loved him, I'll tell you that much. And he remembered a lot of the things that had happened in his administration, which didn't happen. They happened in films that he was in, other things like that.
You're not making a strong case.
Why is there quiet?
Well, looking back at Ronald Reagan, I think that was another time. And we didn't know that much about them. And I think that the primary process now is more grueling, I would like to say, because you have to be so many places, and you have to be present in New Hampshire, and you have to be present in Iowa and South Carolina, and that is a grueling, grueling experience.
Yeah,
I agree,
but,
JP.
You know, they're marathon runners in their 80s, so, you have to look at the person and not just the number, right? The number might be relevant for one and not another.
I mean, should there be a special app, test for someone to make sure they're...
Oh, God, can you imagine?
Well, it would be nice if there was a psychological test, but let's not go there.
And hand in your driver's license, Mike, that kind of thing?
And I do think it's a factor that voters will take into consideration, like all factors. That has to hurt him somewhat, I think, with voters.
Yeah. Well, continuing on with the letters panel. Go Bernie. In 2018 pre-election polls that pit either Hillary or Bernie against Trump, Bernie was the only one to outdo Trump. Top DNC folks ruined Bernie's chances and doomed U.S. to a Trump presidency, and that's Carolyn from Clifton Park. Mm-hmm. And Chris says, Elizabeth Warren, by the way, panel, anytime you have anything to say, just say it, okay?
You haven't noticed that?
No, Chris says, Elizabeth Warren, you have it backwards. Elizabeth Warren is the strongest progressive candidate in the field with the best track record of being able to implement her progressive ideas. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau was her brainchild. No similar accomplishments on Bernie's side. Thanks, Chris from Albany. Thomas says, or Tom, my God, Bernie will be 80 years old if elected and begins to serve as president, which means he won't be elected. He is too old to be viable. Too much the socialist. His time has come and gone. He may have his supporters, but he is the wrong choice for the Democratic Party to win back the presidency. The party should think young, a new generation to lead. And that's Tom from Catskill.
Yeah, I think Tom's right. I think the millennials might be looking for someone from their generation.
Well, the millennials love Bernie.
Yeah, we'll find out, won't we? There'll be surveys. We'll know soon.
Well, that's what the kids say arguing on the corner. Well, we'll find out. But I think they do, and I think there's polling evidence that shows that.
But are they ready to come out 4 years later and throw the same level of enthusiasm behind him and Or have they already been set, you know, inspired by the Beto O'Rourke's or the AOC's or the, you know, Kamala Harris or somebody else?
Yeah, well, four years is forever. It's a different time.
I wonder who AOC will endorse. Yeah. I have to imagine that's the most sought-after endorsement for the Democratic primary this time. It's not like people are going to be begging for Hillary and Bill's endorsement,
that
right? They want AOC's
Alexandra
endorsement.
Cortez is a freshman. I mean, she's been a Congress member for like a matter of weeks, and her endorsement may be one of the most sought-after endorsements going into this primary. Isn't that something?
But she's a great argument for, you know, sometimes you win by coloring outside the lines. Mm-hmm. She's taken a really different approach to it. It really appeals to people who live in the digital age, for whom, you know, Instagram and tweeting and all of this stuff makes a lot of sense, and it's a good way to communicate. And she's been really successful at it.
So far.
Well, she can't run,
so
you know.
Far.
No,
legally.
But she shouldn't run yet.
She's
I mean,
not old
she doesn't
enough.
Have enough experience.
She's not old
no,
enough.
So
if she could, she wouldn't. I think she'd win. But
she doesn't have enough experience.
But I have to say that we don't know how she's going to do in the long run. She had two steps, one of which she tried to take back, and that was the injection into the Palestinian thing, you may remember. And she went before a Jewish congregation, and I think she said something like her great-grandmother was Jewish.
Right.
And that she seems to have avoided that bullet. Now, the next thing is what happened just now in New York City. And by no means is the Amazon thing over yet. We don't know when the dust settles whether she's going to be seen as having helped or hurt. I suspect it's going to cost her.
I do, too.
And by the way, Virginia dodged a bullet on that. They're thrilled Amazon is coming. They've had very little drama.
Right. Right. Well, Virginia is not New York. New York is a very different place.
You do see, though, Kirsten Gillibrand, Senator Gillibrand, who has a big incentive in being on the right side of that issue, came out yesterday as that was a bogus deal where, you know, New York taxpayers aren't going to pay for Jeff Bezos's helipad. It was an outrageous deal. So Kirsten Gillibrand agrees with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Well,
on that
that's because she needs left-wing creds. And she doesn't have them yet. I don't think she's going anywhere in this election.
She's evolving.
Which is what they said when they said, how could you be a conservative if you're standing next to Schumer and D'Amato, of all people? And he said, how can you were against, basically, you were for guns, you weren't great on gays, you weren't this and that, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're changing all of that. And I think it was D'Amato who said, well, she'll evolve. So,
well, you know, when she was
very good D'Amato imitation.
Right, yeah, but when
I've been
she
working
was
working on it for years.
When she was representing her district, her congressional district, it was one thing. Now she's representing the entire state. I'm not saying that her presidency is going anywhere. Her campaign, I don't think it is.
Don't they have names for something like that?
Huh? What, you mean called the flip-flopper or just politically astute?
Whenever, well, okay. So politically astute.
The word is evolving.
Yeah, right.
Well done, Libby.
Right.
Hey. I know, but
not well done.
I think the greater point is, though, is that Senator Gillibrand does have an idea of what's a good political position to take, and that position that she's taken is against the Amazon deal.
But you have to more generally, you have to be allowed you have to be allowed to evolve over time. I mean, there's plenty of all of us have changed our views throughout our lives by, you know, thoughtful you know, discussions and various things. You know, I hated liver when I was 7 years old. I like liver now, you know.
See,
does that mean I flip flopped on liver?
I loved it when I was younger. And now I hate it because I know that it purifies all the toxins from the body.
Well, you know, but you have to be allowed to sort of grow up and evolve.
It's
and
not a sin to learn.
It's not a sin.
Right,
no.
Right. It is about
you
learning.
You want people to be enlightened and to learn and to evolve. Right.
It's just a matter of how much.
Well,
in other words, if people expect you, if people expect that, you know, you're going to go wherever. We used to have a dean at New Paltz. We used to call him the last guy in the door dean. So, you know, whoever got in the door last and gave his opinion, that was the decision that the dean came out of.
Yeah, but that's not what we're talking about. Okay, we're talking about people, whether you support them or not, most of whom, not all of whom, but most of whom, you know, want to make an informed decision. Look at LGBT issues as an example. 40 years ago in the 60s and 70s, it was anathema. It was horrible. You know, you couldn't talk about it. And people people, you know, even Barack Obama, who I voted for, who was in,
took him a while.
It took him a while. First, he was in favor of civil unions. And then, you know, he gradually got there. Joe Biden added him and made him move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that Obama, in his heart, always wanted, was always in the right place. But as president, it was a little more difficult for him to do it because he was governing the entire country. But people do evolve on issues. And if we don't give people the opportunity to evolve, then we are stuck in these bifurcation that never moves us anywhere.
We have to take a quick break here. It is the roundtable. It is the roundtable panel. Fran Berman, Libby Post, J.P. Miller, Mike Spain, Alan Shartok, and you at panel@wamc.org. Oh, the stack of letters continues to grow. We will continue to read them after a brief break.
Support for WAMC comes from the Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, celebrating 30 years of protecting the land that protects the lake, offering more than 35 miles of trails for hiking, birding, and outdoor exploration, lglc.org. Belvedere Home Care, professional, local, in-home care for family members since 2001, working to help people stay in their homes. Peace of mind starts here. BelvedereHomeCare.com. Cary Institute of Ecosystem Studies, Millbrook, New York, presenting a new report on the latest science on the environmental and health impacts of road salt pollution for citizens and decision makers, available at caryinstitute.org. And Concerts in the Village, Kinderhook, presenting 7 French masterpieces for orchestra with voices, Berlioz to Debussy, Ravel to Millot, this Sunday, 3 p.m., Kinderhook Reformed Church, concertsinthevillage.org.
Yeah, 1998, that's the Go-Go album, John Scofield with Medeski, Martin, and Wood. That's as good bumper music as you're going to get. Mike Bowen, the engineer. You're pointing at somebody. Oh, close the door. Oh, thank you, Mike. It's the roundtable, very informal. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. The roundtable panel is in session. We got Mike Spain, who is retired. We woke him up early today, said, can you do the show? He said, I don't know. I was up late last night.
Retirees get up early.
Carol Burnett was on. Oh, you're right.
Crack of dawn.
Right? You are so mean.
Well, there's Fran Berman. And Fran, you've been on your best behavior today. Thank you for being here. Libby Post is here, who is the birthday person.
The birthday person.
Happy birthday.
This is very exciting. Alan Shartok is here, and it's always great to have you here, sir.
As for the music, Ishtar.
What's that?
Well, you may remember Ishtar was a terrible movie.
Oh, you think sure that's was. Terrible music?
Yes.
And you Gene, are, and, sir, and Gene, now speaking heresy.
And Gene Shalit said, Ishtar is terrible.
That is one of the best records of the 1990s, and if you want to take it to the Weehawken Plain, we shall do so.
I'll see you out there.
You bring your banjo. Perhaps it'll be in tune. J.P. Miller is also here from the Empire Report. What's new on the Empire Report?
The Bernie announcement is our
big
top story. Yeah, he's from Brooklyn, so we're counting it as New York news.
All right, fair enough. He does. You know, for a Vermont guy, his accent is strangely New York-y.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a good point. All right, we have a stack of letters here,
okay,
and let's get back to them.
Here we go back to the stacks. Margaret says, panel, I'm nervous about Trump's new socialist labeling in his anti-democratic propaganda. However, I think Bernie would still have an advantage over Warren in our still current sexist environment. Also, it is so uncommon to change your party affiliation. Oh, is it so uncommon to change your party affiliation from independent to Democrat? And Margaret in the Green Mountains, that's what she said.
Okay.
And Keith said, Bernie's record. Bernie should run on his record in his almost 3 decades as a federal legislator. He sponsored 3 bills that became laws, 2 bills to rename post offices, and a bill for veterans' benefits during the Iraq War. After the Trump administration is done, we will need a new administration that can fix this mess and get things done. Bernie's record has demonstrated he is not up to the difficult task, Keith. And then we heard from Catherine. Oh, from Kingston, of course. Catherine from Kingston.
Gotcha. Unless it's Catherine with a C, and then it wouldn't work.
No, then she
Catherine
have to
from
be
Coxsackie.
Or Claverack.
Right.
Okay, so, dear esteemed panel, pardon me.
Would you like a lozenge?
No.
All right.
Even though I wasn't in favor of everything Michael Bloomberg did as mayor of New York City, I think he is the most viable candidate for 2020. Should he decide to run, he's a grown-up. He has vast administrative experience and knows how to get things done. He's savvy about the economy. He's an actual self-made billionaire, and he knows that climate change is real and is the gravest threat we face. Thanks, as always, for the discussion, Catherine from Kingston.
I agree with Catherine. I want to hear more about Bloomberg, too.
I would love to see a Bloomberg versus Bernie Sanders presidential debate. Could you imagine?
That would be excellent.
Well, there are those people who listen to the show when I say something good about Bloomberg who let me know in no uncertain terms that what we don't need, they keep saying, you know, is another, you know, Trump-like billionaire who has all of this money. I am a great fan of Bloomberg's because in addition to having done a few questionable things like his bought third term, you may remember, as mayor.
Yeah, that was a little sleazy.
It was. Yeah. I would say that, you know, he's done a great deal. In the city of New York, and I think he is a good manager, and I think he has a management style. But you have to get in. You can't wait for him to
come. You got to throw your hat in the ring.
Yeah.
He's
always had this problem.
But
always.
They also, though, Bernie and he have two vastly different ideas of how the American economy should work, and both can make a really good case for their own position on it.
And wouldn't you love to hear that debate?
Yes, I would love it.
Yeah.
And Gene says, Democratic primary question, do you think that the large numbers of candidates will dilute the support of any one candidate so that a surprise candidate such as Harris emerges as the front runner? To which I say, anything is possible.
I'd like to hear more from Harris. I think she's been pretty impressive so far.
Notably, last night she said, I am not a Democratic Socialist.
She saw it coming.
Yeah.
So is this a battle then for the soul of the Democratic Party, or has that battle been waged?
It shows that some, certainly not Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders, but some of the candidates see moving toward the center as the better way to go, and that's a good way to block a Howard Schultz from stealing the center by a third party candidacy.
I think we should get rid of these terms. These are ridiculous because, you know, all of us have a variety of different views. Where they are on the political spectrum changes depending on the issue. Is anybody excited about Howard Schultz?
Howard Schultz is.
Yeah, the happiest. The happiest people are Trump's people.
All I know is I asked Cuomo about Howard Schultz. He says, I don't know anything about him. I go to the Dunkin' Donuts. and then I had a congressman on in the afternoon. They must have put out a memo. Because this guy says, from Connecticut, and he says, I said, what do you think about the Schultz thing? He says, I don't know. I don't drink. I got a Dunkin' Donuts.
Oh, it's the pat answer. Well, to Fran's point, though, Alan, isn't it a circle and people go all the way around and the ones on the far right and the far left end up meeting at one point?
Yeah.
Another guy that grew up in New York, Howard Schultz.
Yeah.
Luke says, Bernie losing steam. Quick thought on Bernie's 2020 announcement. As a 2016 Sanders supporter, I would have loved nothing more than to support him in this election. That being said, his once radical ideas are now part of the political mainstream. And because of this, I believe he will now be lost in the field. Please discuss Pete Buttigieg and your thoughts on him as a potential candidate.
Oh, my gosh, I love him.
Yeah, sure, he's terrific.
He's young and he's untried, but
he's a mayor,
I don't know.
Right?
I love his spirit, and I think his ideas are fun. And, he's not a presidential candidate, but no. I love that he's out there.
Well, to quote the Sopranos, forget about it.
Yeah. But, you know, mark my words, he'll be back. He'll get
something. Well, isn't that why some of them are in there,
He's
though.
At the beginning of a really fun trajectory.
Okay. And Brian says, the roundtable, Andrew Yang, is gaining momentum. I realize he's not in any of your radars yet, but his message is starting to change the conversation on the left. His freedom dividend is refreshing data-fueled reform, and media needs to start to take note, and that's Brian from Hillsdale.
I should point out, Andrew Yang was born in Schenectady, and he's a tech
billionaire. Another New Yorker.
But another New Yorker, yes.
Right. And he's a wealthy guy?
He's a wealthy tech guy, but a technocrat, and is trying to wage an independent candidacy also.
Lucas says, Lucas from Austerlitz. I read a lot of press writing Bernie off this time, and thank you, Ray.
That's okay, sir.
Because of this new field of runners, I find that ridiculous. With the candidates in the field, I feel like it's mostly just trendy, blowing hot air coming from them. With exception of Elizabeth Warren, most folks I talk to see and feel that and are still in love with Sanders' genuine self. I don't think things have changed. People still want that, and people are still upset with the 2016 Democratic primary. Don't all yell at once. Okay, here we go. And Carl says, Bernie, I am a Bernie supporter. About the question of Bernie Sanders joining the Democratic Party, if he wants to run in the Democratic primary, flip it around. Why does the Democratic Party let him run in their primary? Why doesn't the party require that he register as a Democrat in order to run in their primary? It's because they don't want him running as an independent and split the ticket. By letting him run in their primary, the Dem establishment has control. If he doesn't win another Dem will, I hope, or if he does, the Democrats win as well. And that's Carol from Chesterfield, where nobody smokes. Jamie.
That makes sense.
What?
That makes sense.
Yeah. Jamie says, agendas are us. Pence could not win re-election in his own state. Oh, wait, neither could Trump. New Yorkers know him too well. Bernie should stay in the campaign until he establishes his agenda as the party's agenda. If he is far ahead in the primaries, then the party should get behind him and consider the vice president and a cohesive future.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, they're basically saying that Bernie in the primary, even if he doesn't win, will shape the party's positions.
Which
going
he did
in.
The last time.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Maureen says, age. If justices remain on the bench for life, isn't it discrimination to set a limit on a president? And that's from Maureen. And I agree with
okay,
Maureen.
Okay. But just to play devil's advocate, the Supreme Court, they don't have the nuclear button.
Right.
Well, who would you rather have the nuclear button? Ruth Bader Ginsburg or Donald Trump?
All right, that's but it's not an issue, Alan.
No, because I was replying to raise obvious discriminatory.
That's not an ageist, not at all, sir. Not at all.
Agenda.
You're in favor of no limits on presidential reelection?
No, I'm in favor of two terms.
Oh, you're in favor of two terms, right? Yeah. I misunderstood you.
No, I am, but I am not in favor of ageism, saying you can't run if you're 80 years old. Or 77.
Well, that's not what this person said.
Or
well,
77.
I don't think Justice Ginsburg has talked about running for president, right?
What's your point?
Well, she's not running for president.
No, there was some invidious comparison between, who would have their hand on the button and what you want somebody who is older having their hand on the button. And my answer is yes. Yeah, I would. And Gunner says, roundtable. I'm on the cusp between millennials and Gen X. I would eagerly go to vote for Bernie in 2020, along with many of the others who are currently vying for the Democratic nomination. And I was furious when Hillary swayed the DNC in her favor away from Bernie in 2016. I had to drag myself to the polls to cast a vote for Hillary. Whoever gets the nomination needs to be able to make people like me want to get out and vote for something in 2020 as much as they want to vote against Trump.
All right, we'll have to take a pause there. Fran Berman, thank you for joining us today. Libby Post, the birthday person, J.P. Miller, Mike Spain, Alan Shartok on the panel, Ray in for Joe. We'll have more letters. The stack of letters continues to grow. Panel at WAMC.org is the email address. We will break for some news and be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Tuesday morning, 5 minutes after 10 o'clock. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's the Roundtable panel. And boy, we've been reading letters for some time, and the letters keep coming. I guess if you have missed the news, Bernie Sanders has officially made his announcement that he is running for president. And the outpouring of comments from our listeners is quite extensive. We have J.P. Miller, Libby Post, Fran Berman, Mike Spain, and Alan Shartok on the panel, and you at panel at WAMC.org. And Alan, let's continue.
Okay, and Mark says, panel, everyone talks millennial this and millennial that. They don't vote. They stayed home in 16 and 18. Come on! A Bernie Warren ticket would be unbeatable. Even my conservative friends, and I do have conservative friends, respect Bernie, although they may not agree with him. I am still feeling the burn, and Mark from Cobleskill. That's what Mark said. Okay, and John says, evolution. Libby, how do you feel about Tulsi changing her views on LGBTQ?
Chelsea, as in Clinton?
About Tulsi, says here, Tulsi.
Oh, the Hawaiian congresswoman.
Well, you know, she was pretty homophobic, and I'm thankful that she's seeing a different way, but I will be cautiously optimistic. How's that?
Bruno says, Ray Graff for president.
You see?
There you go.
I will not run.
Even if drafted?
What if nominated? Would you?
Absolutely not.
Would Alan be your vice president?
No. That would be an unsafe position to be in.
It would not be.
Matt says, Bloomberg versus Trump. The only way to beat a bad guy with a billion is a good guy with a billion. Enjoy. Matt from Robbinsville, where everybody cheaps.
Okay. I kind of love that.
All right. Let's see here. Bobby and Troy. Where does Bernie Sanders' announcement put the potential of a Joe Biden candidacy? What do you think, panel? Thank you and happy birthday, Libby.
Oh, that's a very good question.
Well, it is a good question. I think, in fact, it ends up putting Joe Biden in a better spot because Joe Biden would be the natural antithesis to a left progressive.
But it also clears the way if Bernie picks up picks up the support people anticipate, then it clears the way for someone else in that same age bracket to run.
I think Joe Biden is likely not to run for a few reasons. One is he has run three times already, not once, not twice, but three times already. None of those three times was he one of the final candidates that was seriously potentially going to be the nominee.
And yet he's the front runner. I
wouldn't say he's a front
20%.
Runner. 20%. No, he has the most name ID. That's all that poll represents. He also does not have the ability to raise money, has never had the ability to raise money. He also has family issues that are going to come up that I don't think he wants to answer questions about.
Well, you know, here's the thing.
Like what?
People hate Trump. They hate him. And they're looking for somebody who will make them feel better. And Biden is a
good
candidate.
And he can reach the disaffected white Democratic working class voters who left.
Joe Sixpack.
The Joe Sixpack. He can talk to them. And it's a different time. He spent 8 years as vice president. I think he can raise the money. I think he is incredibly important. And I would like to know about what family issues you refer to.
You can read about it on the internet, about Joe Biden family issues. But the other thing that I would say about Biden is he is also a gaffe machine. He has made tons and tons of
and
gaffes
Trump
over
isn't?
The years.
Well, yeah, is it that everybody else who does a gaffe has to pay for it, but Trump, who has had thousands of them.
He has that Reagan-esque
Teflon
quality of not having his gaffes come to bite him.
You said, Mike and Fran, okay, Bernie's announcement. If the Bernie ticket has an obviously younger running mate, millennial, who could clearly take over the presidency, Bernie would be seen as a grandfather mentor to a new generation. And that's from Jasmine. Sherry says, presidential Democratic candidates, I feel the Democrats are spreading themselves too thin. Wouldn't it be great if the candidates would group together and decide who would be the best candidate to choose to lead to ensure a 2020 win? That ain't going to happen. You know, I mean, people are selfish.
People would all say me.
Yeah, but I do think nobody's trashing each other yet. And I do think that ultimately the majority of these people will fall in line behind whoever the Democrats pick, because we can't, you know, what's that saying about the perfect being getting in the way of the good.
And a lot of them are in there for other reasons. Some are in there hopefully to be the vice presidential candidate,
and others
are in there to be a future presidential candidate.
Name out there. Or being a secretary of something on the cabinet.
Remember, John Kennedy made a pitch to be the vice president. There was a lot of pressure in 1956 with Adlai Stevenson. He didn't get it, but it got his name out there.
I sat at Buck's Rock work camp, my counselor and I, and we were the only ones who gave a damn, and we watched that go forward, and Keith Alver got it. Remember, he had a coonskin hat on, and that's what everybody remembered. But I'm so old that I remember that as if I was young.
But Kennedy's name was out there.
Right.
And in 1960, people knew who he was when he was out on the stump and in the primary.
Yeah, good point. Okay, and Patty says, Bernie. Bernie is as corrupt as all the rest. Aside from the sexism in his previous campaign, these are issues in his closet which will certainly be revealed the second time around. Is everyone a hypocrite? John says,
I think he's been pretty clear about where he's evolved, and he's trying to deal head-on with the problems. New York Times had a big piece about how he didn't have enough support of blacks in his last run, and how he needs to mitigate that by, being more open to having blacks in key positions on his campaign staff. People make mistakes; they evolve, right?
You know, I don't think everyone's a hypocrite, but I do think everybody's imperfect, and. You know, if we hold everyone to a standard where every point of view they would have had since birth and they never made a mistake and they never learned from anything, some mistakes are, worse than others.
Take George Wallace, for example.
He's one of the fiercest
racists that this country has ever seen. And in the end, he apologized. And a lot of people said, that's okay.
Robert Byrd.
KKK member and completely
back to the AOC issue. Yeah. Here's somebody who does not sell herself as perfect, and everybody's kind of okay with that. I really think it's time for us to get more realistic about these people who are running for these offices.
Yeah. Well, John says, Bernie, I like Bernie, but I worry that the Trump campaign Republican Party are prepared for this just as they were for Hillary. Notice the rhetoric on socialism lately using the Nicaragua issue to drive the point home on how it doesn't work. And that's John from Great Barrington.
Well, Trump is already doing that. He did it yesterday in Miami speaking about Venezuela. He's talking about how the failure of socialism in Venezuela has caused this chaos that's going on down there. And
it certainly helped, right?
Oh, sure. I mean, the socialism that was practiced in Venezuela is vastly different than someone in the U.S. who is practicing or at least preaching democratic socialism, and that is just the Democratic Party's ideals pushed towards, more government involvement.
If you're not watching this on our video screen, you have to look at Ray's face. He's going as Mike was talking about this, he had one side of his lip a little bit up.
I'm actually planning ahead for the next segment, so don't mind me. You guys talk. I moderate.
But they're demonizing socialism, the word socialism, and connecting one extreme socialism situation that failed in Venezuela to somebody who's pushing for health care for all.
Well, it is going to be, if there is a Democratic Socialist nominee from the party, it is going to be the word socialism is going to be a big deal. They're going to say,
I can just see the ads.
Venezuela was a failed version of socialism. Do you have a good, successful version of socialism that you can point to?
And that's why Bernie wouldn't have won.
Denmark.
What'd you say, Fred?
Denmark.
Yeah. Well, Mario used to take this on all the time, and he would say, what do you mean socialism is bad? You go to the library?
Right.
You go to a public school? This and that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Do you have Medicare?
Right. Yeah. They would have done the same thing to Bernie if he was the nominee in 2016, they would have excoriated him about this. And with Russia no longer, quote unquote, being a socialist country, right, there are some who would say that it's now a success. And with China being a communist country that is actually a player on the capitalist world stage, some will say that they're really a capitalist country, but they're just fascists. So I think, not having that Soviet whipping boy anymore around this, and just going down to Venezuela or Cuba,
or Nicaragua,
or some of those other places, it can have some currency. But the fact is that people don't pay attention with what's going on down there.
Okay, and Roseanne says, strong team. Good sunny morning, panel. If Bernie wins primary, how about a Kamala Harris or Elizabeth Warren as VP? Alan, you mentioned the 2016 people were looking for an outsider. I think that since Trump was an outsider, people want normal now. An outsider has been too exhausting. Well, all outsiders are not the same. That's for sure.
Well, I think it's unlikely that a Vermont senator would pick a Massachusetts senator, both of whom are, Democratic socialists, but rather, I mean, Kamala Harris is a good, a good example of the kind of person that would balance the ticket. She is not a Democratic socialist, and she's a law and order Democrat from California. She's a woman of color and proving to be very popular. That would be mm-hmm. a ticket that would, you know, perhaps transcend.
So Matthew, or Matt, from Liberty, Sanders' nomination would be a disaster. He has virtually no support among the Black Democratic community. That, by the way, is a very important point. Just follow the Twitter feeds, and he has escaped true political scrutiny, arms around Fidel, his awful gun control record, his racially insensitive comments, and I know legions of Democrats who can't stand him. Oh, and he is not a Democrat. Thank you, Libby, from Matt.
You're welcome.
Okay. And Vincent says, Bernie Sanders. I believe the vast majority of Democrats, Bernie Sanders is now completely irrelevant. Most of us are looking for a younger candidate who has concise, realistic, progressive agenda. Vince from Kingston. And Brucey says, Bernie is a dangerous spoiler, very dangerous. His ego is his downfall and maybe ours too. Now look, folks, I interviewed Bernie, I don't know how many times, on the congressional corner when he was a congressman mm-hmm. and as a senator. And I think I talked to him many, many times. And, you know, the truth of the matter is that he doesn't compromise with his ego that much. Put another way, you know, he does believe in himself.
No, that's an artful way to put it.
Yeah. I can say
oh, please.
That.
My mother might say he's full of himself, you know, in her day. Yeah.
Yeah. Nikki says, Bernie. I've been a longtime Bernie supporter. I'm proud that he's my senator, but I do not think he should run. He will be 79 in 2020, although 79 may be the new 49. It is time to have candidates from a younger generation. I'd love to see people like Bernie and Joe Biden move to bring to being elder statesmen and exert influence that way. I think he will lose votes and because of his age, and Democrats need to win in 2020. And that's from Nikki in Wilmington, Vermont.
How old is Trump?
Trump is 77. Yeah, I think
77, and he's 6'9".
Yeah, and he's 180 pounds.
But he doesn't smoke and he doesn't drink.
Yeah, not
so
do
he's
I.
Healthy, except for the obesity.
I left my
that's and that's what my doctor told me, and that's why I lost all this weight.
I still like the previous letter that said 79 is the new 49.
Yeah, not
that
really.
That's pretty good.
79 is the new 79.
Oh,
yeah.
I don't like that.
What? Don't. What are you looking at?
I'm looking at your.
Boy, that's a tough.
People
glare.
Who say 70 is the new 50, it's all jive, right? You are what you are.
You're like you're saying, as young as you
like,
feel.
It's like saying like obese is the new thin, Ray.
Yeah. No, it's not. It's not saying that at all, sir. No.
Oh, okay.
It's saying what is. And what isn't, isn't. And 79 is not 59.
Philosophically, you are untouchable.
All right, let's keep going.
All right.
You like your job, right?
Teresa says, panel. I love Bernie Sanders and all he has brought forward these last few years, but I think Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren should stand down for the newly awakened representatives coming forward. I don't think they will be able to rally enough support for president, and our environment couldn't withstand another 4 years of the current administration. Please don't bring back Hillary. I voted for her over Trump, but she's really a representative of the status quo, and that's from Teresa.
Has she officially
she's
bowed
not
out?
Not right.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's talking about Hillary.
No, she made a couple of comments about that she wasn't out of it.
Really?
She's not right.
Yeah, but that was a while ago, don't you think? A
couple of weeks. Okay, Sonia says, Sanders announcement, Democrat. I made phone calls to primary states before any votes were cast and kept hearing from people torn between Sanders and Trump. Of course he can beat him, especially now that Trump's base will be receiving tax returns that reveal the con of the Republican mm-hmm. tax plan. Libby, we have a two-party system rigged against third parties, all capitalists. Third-party candidates are kept out of debates. Sanders won't run as an independent because he does not want to split the vote and hand the Republicans a win. He can and will win. And that's from Sonia.
She's feeling the burn.
A lot of people are this morning. We got a lot of letters. In fact, we've done an hour of letters, I think, almost.
We have, Raymond. Yeah. And Larry says, Bernie. Good morning, panel. I agree with nearly everything that Bernie says, but in capital letters. Well, what'd you jump?
Nothing. My headphones are too loud. Go ahead.
But I will not be voting for him. I believe he doesn't have administrative skill or sufficient foreign policy experience. And Roger says, Bernie versus Elizabeth Warren. Does the panel think that Elizabeth Warren evidences this level of authority, of authenticity and sincerity that Bernie Sanders clearly possesses and that is surely required to run for president on the Democratic ticket? Thank you. And that's from Roger. And that's the last
one
I have.
Amazing. And well done, everybody.
Correction, Trump is 72, one of our writers.
Ah, yeah. Okay. There you go.
It just seems like 77 to me.
Thanks
to everyone for the letters.
One of the topics that was brought up last night by Fran is in the New York Times. And I think it was in yesterday's New York
Times.
Our
own Fran.
We only have about 3 minutes here, and it's just not enough time to jump into much of this, the rest of the stuff I had on the list. Chinese and Iranian hackers renew their attacks on U.S. companies. This rang an alarm bell for Fran.
Well, it did raise an alarm bell for me. And so this is just something everybody should be keeping an eye on. And if you think about it, we're engaged in two kinds of badness in cyberspace. One is the things that we deal with all the time in the commercial space, being hacked and, you know, having our Social Security numbers sold and, you know, all of the misbehavior you see coming across email all the time. But the other thing we're dealing with is cyber espionage, which every country on earth mm-hmm. is dealing with, and some are better than others. And Obama and you know, the U.S. and China about 4 years ago kind of ratcheted that down.
Rapprochement.
Yeah.
Now, what? And so.
But now we're seeing a rise in it.
The narrative was that the Chinese then backed off. And did you see quantitative proof of that, Fran?
Well, the people that are keeping track of that, looking at cybersecurity, did see quantitative proof of that. And, you know, this is a whole world that's a little bit hard for most of us to understand because the methods that people use and the ways that people use and who get targeted are not necessarily in the news, and much of that is secret. Mm. And, in fact, it's secret because one way we figure out strategies to counteract it is to take these secret things and figure out secret things of our own.
Right.
But I think the significance of that article is it's really being stepped up. It's being stepped up by China. It's being stepped up by Iran. And this is different from the kinds of things when you get, you know, the emails telling you to, you know, press on this and right. you know, things get stolen.
And there's a qualitative difference between what the Chinese generally do and what the Iranians generally do, right? The Iranians the Chinese will go more toward industrial and military secrets. The Iranians are out to wreak havoc on the financial systems.
But the Chinese, you know, one mode of thinking is that the Chinese are really thinking about this in terms of their own push to become dominant in artificial intelligence in the next 5 years. And that a lot of this espionage is in service of sort of building up that program to be the global leader in that. And that's a worrisome thing.
Fran, do you think it's at the point where cybersecurity could be a national emergency that might require that designation by the White House?
Cybersecurity is a national emergency. It's been a national emergency for a long time, and it's not just sort of security in the espionage space. It's security in the consumer space. Mm. You know, if you think of all the data that you give up, you know, we're basically click hamsters for, you know, every company you can imagine, and all of that data is going to make decisions about you and limit your opportunities, and used in ways that disadvantage you.
All right,
and
folks,
we're not good on that.
We unfortunately have to leave it there. Fran Berman, thank you for being here. Libby Post, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday, Libby.
And thank you to everyone for all the good wishes.
J.P. Miller, Mike Spain, Alan Chartok, thank you all. And thanks to everybody, all 3,000 of you who wrote emails today on this program. It was a good one. We'll be back again tomorrow with more of the panel. There's a lot more roundtable ahead. We got good stuff for you. Stick around.